Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Good evening, and welcome to Amplify, a telephone talk show that looks at life from a religious perspective. I'm Father Ron Lingwin, hoping that you have felt the warmth of God's love in your life this day, but especially the joy you feel when you share God's love with others. As a way of introducing our topic for the evening, at least partially, I'd like to begin our program, as we do each week, with a story that is based on faith and formed with imagination. The disciples had gathered to spend some quiet time with Jesus, a time for reflection. Jesus was pleased as he looked at them, and he began to pray silently. When he was finished, he stoked the fire that was giving little warmth to their bones. Peter said, "Master, I ask you this question. Is the power of evil stronger than the power of good? If it is, why is it?" John interjected, "What a strange question to ask." Jesus said, "No. No, my friends, it is an appropriate question, a good question, a question you must think about before trying to answer it. And so, let us pray together first." The men bowed their heads, and each of them began to pray silently. Then Jesus prayed out loud, "I ask that the Heavenly Father give us the wisdom and the words to answer the question Peter has asked." Then Jesus sighed again and said, "The power of evil is strong. It is with us each and every day of our life on this earth. We see it, and yet many times we choose to ignore it and pretend we are not tempted by it. To others, evil seems like a golden light, and they are drawn to it to drink deeply from its power. But after they have taken from this cup of evil in any form, it is bitter to their lips, and it darkens their souls. It eats at their being like leprosy, their bodies, their minds, their souls." Peter got up slowly and said, "You scare me, Master, you scare me." Jesus nodded and said, "You should be frightened." Again, Jesus began to stoke the fire and said, "Fire gives us warmth. Is this not so?" The men all shook their heads in agreement. Jesus continued, "But if you place your hand in the fire, what will happen?" They looked at one another and answered, "It will burn you." "Yes," said Jesus, "it burns, it hurts. But it does not hurt your neighbor unless he too puts his hand in the fire. Do you understand?" The men nodded. They did. Then Jesus said, My friends, evil is nothing to dismiss. It is all around us, but we do not have to partake of it. We will be tempted by it many times, but we must be strong and fight against it, especially through the use of prayer." Tears began then to form in his eyes. With a great sigh, he said, "Pray. My friends, pray for all of those who are tempted by evil, those who have touched evil, and those who are filled with it." A story of faith and imagination. Our guest this evening writes in the introduction to his latest book titled Saint Michael the Archangel. There's little doubt that the crisis in the Catholic Church today is both enormous and disturbing. The enduring sex abuse scandal is mind-numbing. Scores of Catholics have left the faith altogether. Division, unrest, violence, and mistreatment of others seemed acceptable ways of life. The dictatorship of relativism commands that there is no one objective and absolute truth. The ensuing freedom for all has revealed the depravity and hollowness of our supposed enlightened society. While Pope Francis calls the globalization of indifference causes many of us to shrug when we observe such a landscape, for the indifferent, this is how the world is, as it always was and likely will always be. But from another perspective, in past eras, saints and martyrs have arisen out of similar turmoil to reshape the world and the faith. The only answer strong enough to combat centuries of scandal and turmoil is Jesus Christ. It is only in our pride that we think such an answer is weak and ineffective. Today there are souls who, in the name of Christ, will rise above the heinous scandals of sex abuse and moral corruption, unbelief and ridicule, to renew the faith. Even in her darkest hours, the Church never fails to manifest the Eucharistic Lord at every Mass on every day throughout the world. The Church has a trove of inspiration to fortify her faithful through each day's struggles. Christ also sends His Blessed Mother and the saints to remind us we are not alone. He also sends His archangels, ready and willing to do His will. There is one angel in particular, primed for crises and battles. We know him as Saint Michael. Our guest this evening, who is the author of these words, is James Day. He's a writer, filmmaker, and television production manager for EWTN. He has produced several festival screen short films, one of which, The Passion of Veronica, a dystopian thriller set in the near future where Catholicism is outlawed, was nominated for Best Short Film at the Vatican's Mirabile Dictu Film Festival in 2014. He currently manages EWTN's, that's the Eternal A Word Network, in Orange County, which produces original content in Spanish and English. He's also the author of two previous books, one on Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI, Pope Benedict, In a Place for Christ Forever, Becoming Christ's Cathedral, with a foreword by Cardinal Robert Serra. He has a book in development on Catholicism and Hollywood's Golden Age and is currently researching the history of the Shroud of Turin. James Day, welcome to Amplify.
Good evening, Father Ron. Thank you so much for having me. It's a true honor to be with you this evening.
Oh, so great to have you. This would be one of my favorite topics, of course, St. Michael the Archangel. I love talking about him. And the next book that you're rewriting would be another one that I'm very interested in, is The Shroud of Turin, which in the early days of my program, we're talking about 40 years ago, when it was first coming to popular interest, is one that certainly, when that's written, put me on the list. I want to be there. But let's begin with St. Michael. Do you have a personal devotion to St. Michael, or what is it that motivated you to write this book?
I absolutely do have a personal devotion to St. Michael, for he is the patron, the namesake of my childhood parish in the Diocese of Cleveland, not too far from you. And it's called St. Michael Church, and it's in a small town called Independence, Ohio, about 8 miles south of Cleveland. And it was there where I was baptized and received Holy Communion and First Confession and Confirmation. And there's an adjacent school, St. Michael's, grade school, where I went from first through eighth grade. But, you know, it wasn't really until, you know, I'm 38 now, you know, so mm-hmm. quite a long time between that experience. My mom is still a parishioner there at St. Michael's, but I didn't realize, I guess, the impact that time period, that church, and that saint left on me until, you know, with mature eyes, started to look on life and look at the life of the faith and realize how much I saw that life through the lens of St. Michael. And it was in the last couple of years, as you mentioned, you read so beautifully, thank you, that part of that introduction mentions, you know, the crises and the scandal and the corruption that we've been facing. Who emerges out of that, as he always has, is St. Michael. And it just was sort of a light bulb moment that said, well, wait a minute, why can't we just synthesize St. Michael into a book and I'll give it a shot? And I was really motivated by my connection with St. Michael, because I saw through him, through the lens of faith, you know, particularly the struggle between good and evil, right and wrong. The Catholic imagination was really fueled by his image, by his imagery, by his character. But he was such a hero. He is a hero, you know, in both Jewish and Christian tradition. That really said something to young boys like myself. It was a great way to identify with saints and with the church, and I really wanted to give back here years later. And that, so that's really the genesis for the book.
And I went to the internet, and as I've talked about you in our phone conversation, to read two things you've written in the Catholic World Report, from Bukowski to Benedict and Secularism's Moonshot, Doctrine of Resurrection. I don't want to get into them. I want to stay with the book. But two things, just if I were to pull a sentence in terms of why we might be talking about St. Michael tonight. You say, in one, the most harrowing effect is the palpable absence of God in the world. Amplify on that just a little bit.
I would love to. And thanks for pulling that, because I think that really is at the core of our existence in terms of who we are, the great philosophical questions, you know, who we are, where are we going, where do we want to be? I'm not sure we're asking those questions anymore. And if we are, it's not necessarily with a Christian perspective. And I speak, I know that's very general, but when I say that, I think of people, my peers, I think of myself even, you know, raised in the faith, and how we've gone away from that, how the church calendar doesn't inform us as it used to, you know, how traditions have been lost, how the communion of saints, and you think about the great treasure trove of our faith has vanished because we were not so attached to the faith as previous generations. A lot of that was done by human hand, you know, as you mentioned and as you read in the introduction.
Mm-hmm.
But it's disturbing because, you know, I don't feel as anchored by the faith. I don't feel as we're communicating or we're in communion with others as we should be. We can easily, from all over the world, we can easily identify with people, because we can walk in any church around the world and we'd all be experiencing the same moment of grace, which is, you know, the Eucharist. But we're not really connecting that way anymore. And it's really leaving a hollow sense of life is just going the way it's going. And what happens, happens. It's, you know, that relativism idea that I'm sure we'll get into as we talk further.
And you also write in the other article, just pull out one sentence, secularism is nothing more than an attempt to remake Christianity's understanding about man, God, and the world. And one of the beautiful quotes that you have in the book is from then, in 1976. And back then, even before then, one of the most popular personalities on television was Bishop Sheen, and he was saying some of the same things in the same spirit that then Cardinal Carlo Wojtyla, later Pope John Paul II, Saint Pope of John Paul II, said. We are now standing in the face of the greatest historical confrontation humanity has gone through. I do not think that wide circles of American society or wide circles of the Christian community realize this fully. We are now facing the final confrontation between the church and the anti-church, of the gospel versus the anti-gospel. We must be prepared to undergo great trials in the not-too-distant future, trials that will require us to be ready to give up even our lives, a total gift of self to Christ and for church. Through your prayers and mine, it is possible to alleviate this tribulation, but it is no longer possible to avert it. How many times has the renewal of the church been brought about in blood? It will not be different this time. They're sort of frightening words, much like my first story said when Jesus, in A Story of Faith and Imagination, talked about the power of evil. And Peter says, boy, you're frightening me, Lord. But you follow it with these words. Our entire journey with St. Michael throughout Scripture in both the Old and New Testament, from church history and tradition to the sacraments, the Most Holy Eucharist and the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, and in the works of the brave and fearless who found a model of courage in St. Michael, all of it leads toward the end, both of one's time on earth and even that of the church, which, as the Catechism reminds us, is only here as a pilgrim on earth. They are in some way frightening words, but we can look at them hopefully. When we look at someone, certainly we turn our lives over in model of Christ, but we also have been told something of the model of St. Michael the Archangel is going to give to us, haven't we?
Oh, absolutely. We can look at St. Michael's battle with, as detailed in Revelation 12, his great battle, as something trivial. When do you think that happened? You know, how many angels do you think fought against? How many went on Lucifer's side? You know, and you kind of get removed from the reality of the moment, which is, and then you kind of distance yourself. You say, well, it doesn't really affect me. This is something that happened or will happen, or the end times are something that's going to be billions of years from now. But really, you can mention that in your beautiful story at the beginning, Faith and Imagination, that we're faced with moments every day. Yes. Every decision, every thought is a reflection of that battle that Michael embodies. So it is frightening because it's real. And the four last things are always there in our mind. You know, death is inevitable. It's not something to be afraid of, though. I mean, look, again, if we look at that journey that people have made in our faith, we can find fortification in that.
Right. And you talked about the four last things that we're going to be talking about. And certainly I have great devotion to St. Michael, so much so that a group of people put a statue in the downtown church where I was of St. Michael, and what a wonderful gift it was. We need to take our first break, Jim and James, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion of your book, St. Michael, the Archangel. Welcome back to Amplify, where our guest this evening is James Day. We're talking about his book, St. Michael the Archangel. We know that in the past, a lot of people have talked about times in the world were going to be very difficult, and that St. Michael the Archangel has a place in this, as we know, in this struggle. Remember, it was Jesus himself who said that he saw Satan fall from heaven like lightning. And James had a little bit to say about that in the first part of our program. But you also write, James, that the more we are attuned to invisible movements of the sacred, and that would be the angels that would be included in that, certainly St. Michael would, the more we are attuned to invisible movements of the sacred, the deeper our faith and prayer life will be. Amplify a little bit on that.
Yeah, I come from the Ignatian tradition, particularly in this point, and that would be the adage of discernment of spirits. So, you know, really being in touch with the movement of, well, the order of things and the movement of things and the movement of the spirit. You know, I don't think one can, and it goes back to what we're saying about choices and how we're faced with choices every day, and how really choices make up who we are as people and people of faith. So if we're not in touch with the movement of spirits, the discernment of spirits, I don't think we're going to be able to really identify or really embody what God wanted us to do. And the other Ignatian adage that I would attach to that as well is detachment, though. It doesn't mean indifference, but if we're detached and we're able to be as objective, to be as and yet still passionate and still still engaged, we can really turn corners. We can really reach levels that we never thought possible if we're really tapped into what is God trying to tell me in this moment. And it could be through any number of things, being open to that movement, to that mm-hmm. spirit. It's not just one way. It could be many ways.
We have the sacraments, of course, and prayer as a part of the struggle against the forces of darkness. And Michael stands against it as a personification of victory, righteousness, and justice, as you say. From your answer about the invisible movements of the sacred, even though there are signs, why is the liturgy of the Eucharist an event far more than a meal that, along with prayer, can strengthen us in the struggle against evil?
Because that is where the Eucharistic Lord is manifested. It's where Christ comes to us. God is near us, and it's in that moment. And I think it's something again, to go back to our themes here, seem to be, secularism and indifference and relativism and that sort of thing. We've lost track of what really the liturgy is about. This collapse of time between modern day and the Last Supper, yes, an event that historically happened, but also an event, cosmologically beyond time and place. So, for that to happen, the priest is really endowed with this wonderful gift of being able to sit, to consecrate the bread and wine, and to bring Christ so humble and little in this piece of bread, into our lives. It's almost it's an invitation. Can I be part of you, your life? Will you be part of me? It's a wonderful relationship. And I think, I don't want to get into the politics of church politics. I really try to avoid that with the book with St. Michael. But you look at the last 50 years or so, I wonder if we have gotten off track in trying to appeal to the outside and opening up the windows of the church. Have we sold ourselves short in what we can offer, which is not so much a reflection of the world, but a turning away from what the world offers into something else? And that's climax. It's culminating in the Eucharist.
And as far as St. Michael the Archangel, that devotion has remained strong. It's gone up and down. There's no question about it. When we used to pray to him at the end of Mass, and then we didn't, and now we're doing that once again. But in Jewish tradition, he had the title of Protector of Israel, and someone that they look to. And of course, the power of evil is as destructive in our time, you write, as it ever has been. When you look at the reputation of the church as the world's moral authority, has practically evaporated. So some people believe that evil has actually infiltrated the church, don't they?
Yes, that's a kind of a popular theme right now. I think we have to be wary of, again, trivializing things or sensationalizing things. Again, evil is never going to go away, but we have to have triumph, cross triumph at the end. Michael's presence, reminds us that of that ongoing battle. And also, but also not to be afraid to admit that, yes, there has been there has been flaws and faults that we've experienced. We've all had, and you know this, I mean, we've all had to go endure the pain of what we have entrusted ourselves and family and friends to. We've given ourselves over to the life of the faith, only to have been betrayed in some way. On reflection of the scandals that we've endured in the last, particularly in the last 20 years, it's not unlike the scandal of the passion, the scandal of betrayal, the Judas kiss, Peter's denial, that sort of thing. And I thank you for quoting the line there where Christ says, "I saw Satan fall like lightning from the sky." It really stirred me in comfort that even through these denials and betrayals that Christ endured on earth, Michael, who is not mentioned, you know, at all, you know, specifically in the Gospels, you know, saw this, mm-hmm. experienced this as this angelic being who knew of the Holy Face, who knew of the Triune God well before time, you know, as we know it, began. So, and he was the one who, kind of like, you know, Mary and John, you know, stood at the cross, although we don't see him, but you know, he is there, he hovers, because, how do we know this? Well, we know this because of the references in the liturgy, specifically in the extraordinary form of how Michael is present at Mass, especially in the Requiem Masses. Yes. So it is a comforting thing. It's not just this grand battle against Satan that took place at some other time. It's really in our hearts day in and day out.
And you point out in your book that Lucifer has not retired from the angelic battles. And as a matter of fact, every soul has a battlefield, don't we?
Yes. And, you know, there's a vision, I believe it was Anne Catherine Emmerich's vision that I detail a little bit in the book, who has this wonderful vision that Michael takes her on this vision. And she sees these angels, the bad angels, the Lucifer's minions, you know, if you will, henchmen, underlings, barking at each other, lazy, given over to sloth. You know, they're not as active. You know, they're just sort of there, kind of hanging around, and it's just an uncomfortable image of just how sin kind of creeps into one's life, and before you know it, you're given over to its habits. Even though you're sort of lurking in the shadows, and then that's perfectly where Satan, where Lucifer dwells, and really kind of takes hold. So it's always it's different when night falls. You know, it becomes a different sort of feel out there, and you can see where things happen. You know, the squealing of the tires, you know, the rounding of the corner, the boredom of the teenagers. You know, always happens at night, and that's really where we have to be careful. Where, you know, that darkness of the soul, because Satan can really find a way to tap into it and seize hold of it.
And within your book, we go over all of the figures, but you point out about how the church has changed from within, tax from within, in 1965, I was ordained in 66, there were some 59,000 priests in the country, and just 2 years ago, the number was 37,000, and religious sisters went from 180,000 in 1965 to 46, basically. So there is some truth to what Pope St. Paul VI said in 1972, that he believed the smoke of Satan had entered the church, as we were just talking about. And it has been said that the church is going to remain small and will have to start pretty much all over again because of demonic infiltration. What does the name Michael mean? How should we understand his name?
It means who is like God. And there's a question mark there. It's a question. It's not who is like God. Michael, who? And I remember this goes back to, you know, my youth there at St. Michael's, a good friend who was in Mike Stack, I think I can say his name. I don't think he'll mind, but, you know, it was, one of the September 29th feast days of St. Michael, which is a big kind of celebration day for the school. Blue and Gold Day comes out of the bus and sort of puffing out his chest. And he's like, my name is, who is like God, you know? And, but you think about it when you as you get older, it's actually, it's a question. Who is like God, you know? And there is no one. The answer you can take from, they're both from Psalms. Also, St. Augustine puts it beautifully as well. He says, "There's who is God but thee, O Lord," you know? And so it's really Michael not talking about himself, but it's a reflection of the Godhead. And it's also a counter to Lucifer's non serviam, you know, the Latin of, you know, his rebellion, his cry of rebellion, I will not serve, is countered by St. Michael's own name, which is, who is like God? There is only one God, and it's you, and I will defend your name and honor against Lucifer.
And so tell us a little bit about the angels in general. How are we to understand the movements of the supernatural that we talked a little bit about earlier? Because you write that even amid our most modern emphasis on physical experience, angels remain popular in our culture as fascinating, mystical creatures. Angelology is still a subject of enduring interest across age groups, cultures, and religions. How are we to understand the movements of the supernatural? We've already addressed that a little bit, but as you write, as purely spiritual creatures, angels have intelligence and will. They are personal and immortal creatures, surpassing in perfection all visible creatures, as the splendor of their glory bears witness. Christ is the center of the angelic world. They are his angels, aren't they?
That's right. So the angels were created. They're not born and of a certain time frame. I mean, they're not divine. I mean, they are created beings whose sole purpose is to serve God, and to minister to him and to do his will. And so that's why we have guardian angels. That's why we have different choirs of angels. What's interesting about the archangel choir is that it's one of the lower hierarchy. So you have, supreme hierarchy, and this is all based, we know these hierarchies based from scripture. If you pull, putting it all together forms this tetrarch of hierarchy. So you have the supreme hierarchy, seraphim, cherubim, thrones, the middle hierarchy of dominions, authorities, powers, lower hierarchy, principalities, archangels, and angels. And look at this. So you have archangels all the way down there at the bottom. If you're looking at it as a hierarchical structure, so Michael really emerged out of obscurity to defend the Godhead, to take down Lucifer, who said, "I will not serve." Angelology is a way of there's people who I know who aren't part of the faith, but they have this deep devotion to angels. And I'm thinking we can bridge the difference between the faith and those outside the faith by speaking of angels and speaking of them as very intelligent beings who are there with us all the time. And I don't think we're paying that much attention to angels. I think we see them as the paintings of the cherubic babe, right? And again, we're kind of think it's silly, but it's far from it. And the patristics really got into to the history of angels and the meaning of them, the theology of angels.
And you write that Michael's duty to God was dictated by loyalty and humility, and that in order to understand Michael's place in salvation history, we must also understand Lucifer's.
Right. Yeah. That's one of the it's kind of a yin and the yang idea. As you look, you know, we know from the from images of, from Raphael through to our own stained glass windows of St. Michael, there's Lucifer is not far away. He's always pinned under, you know, the commanding foot of Michael, sword at the ready. He's withering, but he's still alive. It's not a murderous scene. It's almost like a scales of justice. You know, we all know that if you see the book, you know, our Sunday visitor did a wonderful cover of this image we're speaking of now. It's, you know, Michael, sword at the ready with shield, and he's pinning Lucifer down. But it's one of, it's not one of domination over I am more powerful than you. It's just the humility is triumphing over darkness. That's really what I hope this image kind of conveys, and what I really wanted to convey in the book as well.
Right, and you point out that it's the seven deadly sins that motivated Lucifer to turn from God, because Lucifer sought to be like God. And so it becomes a question of pride, according to some scholars, that compels Lucifer to reject and turn against the Heavenly Father. And you write that while Lucifer's rebellion is infamous, the reasons for it are less understood. Why is that? It's just we've not received the revelation.
I hesitate to go into that area, although that is possible in terms of kind of has it been revealed. But I look at it more as from a perspective of human fault and failure. The motivation for things sometimes is very murky.
Yes.
And I think we can understand, by looking at the seven deadly sins, we can pinpoint mm-hmm. Triggers, if you will. And pride really is the one that drives the presence of evil, I think. But, you know, also it's this is where it gets complicated, the lesser known. Was it just pride, though? Or was there a true desire within Lucifer to thinking that he actually could do some good in this way? He was beloved. He was mm-hmm. a beloved figure, you know, a beloved angel. So that's where I say it's lesser known, you know. And I hope I'm not, you know, I'm creating some kind of heretical comment wondering about Lucifer's thought. But you know what I mean. I think it's because things are so complex, because decisions are sometimes so complex. You do the wrong thing, ultimately. But sometimes it's not coming from a bad place.
Some people might be surprised to learn that the war in heaven continues to rage today.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. It continues to rage today because even though the war has ultimately been, you know, the cross triumphs ultimately, we are still experiencing this war as you quoted earlier, as the Pilgrim Church on Earth. So there's the church triumphant, but we're mm-hmm. the church militant, you know, still soldiering through, and we're given a test, basically. Who are you going to serve? You know, and that's really the right. battle that Michael faced.
The whole thing about each of us has free will. Our guest this evening is James Day, where the title of his book is St. Michael, the Archangel. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the rise of devotion to St. Michael, and we'll be back.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.